Warning. This episode contains description that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is strongly advised.
Oddly enough, the Wests in this street were considered to be among the more stable families. Fred did odd jobs for the neighbours down the street. They could be very charming. One of the grotesque aspects of it is that this area was really a sort of play area for the children. The Wests are having a family life here, whereas there are bodies underfoot.
Hi, M&Ms. Welcome back to another episode of Murder and More. As always, I am your host, Kira. Your parents are supposed to love you unconditionally. Your mother holds you in her stomach for 9 months, ensuring you are ready to face the outside world before giving birth to you. She's supposed to nurture you, care for you, want the best in life for you. And your father likewise. He's supposed to love you, teach you how to ride your bike and how to swim. Your parents are supposed to support you through everything life throws at you, and be there to celebrate the good times with you. Parents are supposed to set an example to their children, but two parents, Fred and Rose West, weren't at all nurturing or caring towards their children. In fact, they committed some of the worst acts a person could commit against a child. On the 4th of August 1992, police received an anonymous call from a woman who told them that one of her daughter's friends had suffered severe sexual abuse at the hands of her parents, Fred and Rose West. On the 6th of August, the police searched the family home under the pretext of searching for stolen goods. Although they found lots of sexual paraphernalia, including 99 pornographic videos, police failed to find the video of Fred West sexually abusing his 13-year-old daughter, Louise. The 13-year-old did make a statement through a solicitor, however, depicting her father's sexual abuse towards her and her siblings, and telling them that the abuse towards her started when she was just 11 years old. All the children of 25 Cromwell Street were placed into foster care the following day, with medical examinations revealing evidence of physical and sexual abuse. The children told the police that their mother inflicted the majority of the physical abuse on them, with their father telling them that if they ever told anyone, they would be buried under the patio, just like their sister Heather had been. So, what on earth went on at 25 Cromwell Street, and how long had it been going on for? Today, I'm going to dive into the full history of Fred West and his wife Rose, and all their sick, twisted abuse towards their children. Fred West was born on the 29th of September 1941 in Herefordshire to a poor family who were farm workers. His father, Walter, was a disciplinarian and his mother, Daisy, was overprotective. By 1951, Daisy had given birth to 8 children, 6 of who survived, but Fred was always her favourite and he was definitely a mummy's boy. The children all had chores given to them by their parents. The 3 girls picked hops and strawberries, and the 3 boys harvested wheat and hunted animals. Fred's classmates recall him as being scruffy, dim, lethargic, and regularly in trouble. Fred was never very literate, but did have an aptitude for woodwork and artwork. He left school when he was 15 and started working on the farm that they lived on. Fred claimed he was introduced to sex by his mother when he was just 12 years old, performing bestiality on animals in his teens, and he considered incest to be normal due to his father's incest with Fred's sisters. Although one of Fred's brothers denies these claims and says they were simply a figment of Fred's imagination. Fred and his brother John regularly visited a youth club in Herefordshire where he was known as a bit of a pest and would aggressively pester women and girls who he basically objectified as sources of pleasure to be used as and when he saw fit. When a girl accepted his advances, she'd typically find his sexual performance unsatisfying because he was just in it to gratify himself. Just after his 17th birthday, Fred got into a motorcycle accident where he suffered a fractured skull, a broken arm, and a broken leg. This caused him to have a fear of hospitals, and he also became prone to fits of rage. 2 years later, he suffered another head injury when he groped a girl on a fire escape and she punched him, causing him to fall 2 stories. In June of 1961, Fred's 13-year-old sister Kitty told their mother that Fred had been raping her since the previous December and he'd actually ended up getting her pregnant. Fred was arrested and confessed to the rape of his sister and also confessed to molesting young girls since his early teens, stating, "Doesn't everybody do it?" He was tried on the 9th of November that year, but Kitty refused to testify against her brother and the case fell through. After this, Fred's family disowned him and his mum banned him from entering the house ever again, so Fred moved in with his aunt as he had nowhere else to live. But he had reconciled with his parents by mid-1962. In September 1962, Fred became reacquainted with Catherine Costello, who liked to be known as Raina, who he met at a dance hall in 1960 and had actually dated for a few months before she moved back to Scotland. Fred married Raina in November of 1962, who was pregnant at the time with what was believed to be an Asian bus driver's baby. Raina gave birth to Charmaine in March of 1963, and to explain her being mixed race, the couple told everyone that Raina had had a miscarriage and that they'd adopted Charmaine. In July of 1964, Raina gave birth to Anna Marie at their home in Glasgow. The couple's nanny recalls Raina as a considerate mother who was struggling to bring up 2 young children and says that Fred treated the children harshly. She recalls that Fred kept the girls in the bottom of a bunk bed with bars fitted to the spaces between the bunks, effectively caging them in, and he would only let them out when he was at work. Fred later admitted to having affairs in the earlier years of their marriage and even confessed to having had an illegitimate child with another woman from Glasgow. When Raina found out, she retaliated by starting an affair with a man named John McLaughlin, who regularly beat Fred when he found out Fred had either beaten Raina or if he found out that Fred had hit the kids. In December of 1965, Fred moved to Gloucester with the kids where he rented a caravan and Raina joined him in February 1966 with the couple's nanny, Isa McNeil, and one of her friends, Anne McFall, who were both hoping to find work in England. Fred quickly became dominant and controlling over the 3 women and was prone to violent mood swings. He began physically assaulting his stepdaughter Charmaine and is reported to have started sexually assaulting her and encouraged Raina to go into prostitution to supplement his income. Fed up, Raina phoned John McLaughlin to escape from Fred and his abuse and they came up with a plan. John and Isa's boyfriend would drive down and pick up Raina, the kids and Isa and take them back up to Scotland. Isa's friend Anne McFall had already fallen in love with Fred and he'd promised to marry her, so she was not involved in this plan to escape. Anne must have told Fred the plan, however, because he turned up when they met up with John and a fight ensued. Police were called and eventually John, Isa, her boyfriend and Raina managed to get away, with Anne staying behind with Fred to be the children's nanny. Raina regularly visited Charmaine and Anna Marie. In July 1967, Anne McFall, who was only 18 years old and 8 months pregnant with Fred's child, disappeared. Fred met Rosemary Letts in early 1969 at Cheltenham bus station when he was 27, just after Rose's 15th birthday. Rose was initially repulsed by Fred's unkempt appearance, but was soon flattered by all the attention he gave her. Although Rose had never had a boyfriend, she was overly promiscuous despite being in her mid-teens. Fred took Rose on a date and they quickly began dating, with her being a regular visitor at the caravan he lived in with his children, and she became a willing babysitter to Charmaine and Anna Marie after Anne McFall had gone missing. She noted that the children were neglected and initially treated them with care and affection. Within weeks of meeting Fred, Rose left her job at a bread shop to become Charmaine and Anna Marie's full-time nanny, with Fred promising her that he would give her money every week for her to give her parents, so they thought she was still at the bread shop. Rose introduced Fred to her family a few months later, with her parents disapproving of the relationship. Rose's mother, Daisy, concluded that Fred was a pathological liar, and Rose's father, Bill, a schizophrenic who is believed to have molested Rose, also strongly disapproved of the relationship. Rose's parents forbade her to keep dating Fred, but she disobeyed them and continued the relationship, which prompted her parents to contact social services. Daisy and Bill told social services that their 15-year-old daughter was dating an older man and that they believed she was engaging in prostitution, and Rose was placed in a home for troubled teens in August 1969, but even while she was there, she continued dating Fred, usually choosing to visit him over her parents at weekends. On her 16th birthday in early 1970, Rose left the home for troubled teenagers and returned to her parents, whilst Fred was serving a 30-day sentence for theft and unpaid fines. When he was released, Rose moved in with Fred in the flat he lived in Cheltenham. Rose's father made one more attempt to stop his daughter seeing Fred, and she was examined by a police surgeon in February 1970 who confirmed that she was pregnant. Once again, Rose was placed into care, but was discharged on the 6th of March on the understanding that she would have an abortion and return to her family. Unsurprisingly, Rose didn't have an abortion or return to her parents and went straight back to Fred, resulting in her father banning her from entering his house ever again. 3 months later, in June 1970, the couple left the Cheltenham flat and moved to a ground floor flat in Gloucester. On the 17th of October 1970, Rose gave birth to their daughter, Heather Ann, who is speculated to actually have been Rose's father's child and not Fred's. 2 months later, Fred was arrested for stealing car tyres and a vehicle tax disc and was imprisoned until the 24th of June 1971, leaving Rose to look after the three children alone, where she asked her stepdaughters Charmaine and Anna Marie to call her their mother. According to Anna Marie, she and Charmaine were regularly subjected to criticism, beatings, and other forms of punishment whilst they were under Rose's care. Anna Marie was generally submissive and displayed emotion to the physical and mental abuse, but Charmaine remained stoic throughout and refused to show any emotion to the abuse, which just infuriated Rose. A childhood friend of Charmaine's recalls entering the flat one day unannounced after her mother sent her to ask for some milk. And when she entered, she saw Charmaine, completely naked, standing on a chair, gagged, with her hands tied behind her back with a belt, and Rose stood next to her holding a wooden spoon. Sometime in June that year, before Fred's release on the 24th of June 1971, and after they visited him in prison on the 15th, Charmaine went missing. Charmaine's friend's mum, Shirley, says that one day in June she took her daughter, Tracy, to go and visit Charmaine and Anna Marie, but they were told by Rose that Charmaine had gone to live with her mother and bloody good riddance. Rose told everyone that asked that Charmaine had been picked up by Raina and she'd gone and lived with her in Bristol. She told staff at Charmaine's school that she had gone to live with Raina in London. And when Fred got out of prison, he told Anna Marie that Charmaine had gone to live with their mother in Scotland. Anna Marie recalls in her autobiography that she asked her father why Raina had taken Charmaine but not her, and Fred replied, "She wouldn't want you, love. You're the wrong colour." Raina remained in contact with her children, but her sister recalls that Raina was extremely depressed and anxious about the welfare of her children. When Raina found out where Fred was living with the children, she went there, presumably to confront him and probably demand custody of the kids. And Raina was never seen again. On the 29th of January 1972, Fred and Rose got married at Gloucester Registry Office where no one was invited. Shortly after, Rose fell pregnant with her second child, so several months after they got married, the couple moved to 25 Cromwell Street with Charmaine, Anna Marie and Heather Ann. The three-storey property was originally rented, but Fred bought it off the council for $7,000, and to facilitate this, the couple turned the upper floor rooms into bedsits. Fred placed a cooker and sink on the first floor to maintain the family's privacy, with their lodgers only being allowed to use this and not any facilities on the ground floor where the Wests lived. The lodgers also weren't allowed to go into the garden. On the 1st of June, Rose gave birth to her second child, May June. Shortly after May's birth, Rose began working as a prostitute, operating from an upstairs room at their house and advertising her services in a local magazine. Rose also engaged in casual sex with both men and women who were lodgers at their house, as well as people Fred came into contact with at work. When Rose had sex with women, her brutality towards them increased. She began partially suffocating them and inserting increasingly large dildos into them. If the women resisted or showed any hints of being in pain, this gratified Rose, who would always ask them, "Aren't you woman enough to take it?" Rose and Fred regularly participated in threesomes with the women Rose had sex with, and it was clear that the couple took pleasure in taking women beyond their sexual limits, typically using bondage, with both of them admitting they took pleasure from any form of sex that involved strong measures of violence and pain. To cater to their fetishes, the couple had a large collection of bondage and restraining devices, magazines, photographs and videos of bestiality and graphic child sexual abuse. The room Rose used in the house was known as Rose's Room, which had several peepholes which allowed Fred, a long-time voyeur, to watch her satisfy her clients. He also installed a baby monitor in there so he could listen from other parts of the house and a red light outside the door which warned when Rose was not to be disturbed. Fred also installed a separate doorbell that Rose's clients must ring upon arrival. By 1977, Rose's father Bill had come to accept her marriage to Fred, and when he found out about his daughter's prostitution, he wasn't concerned, as I would be if I found out my daughter was prostituting herself. Instead, Bill would also visit to have sex with his daughter. By 1983, Rose had given birth to 8 children, with at least 3 of them being fathered by her clients, but Fred accepted them all as his own. When each of the children turned 7 years old, they were assigned numerous daily chores around the house, just like Fred and his siblings were when he was young, and were seldom allowed to socialise outside the house unless Fred or Rose were present. And they had to follow the strict rules imposed by their parents. And if they didn't obey the rules, they suffered severe punishment, which was usually physical. Between 1972 and 1992, the West children were taken to the local accident and emergency department 31 times, where the injuries were described as accidents and were never reported to social services. Examples of violence, which was usually dished out by Rose, included when one of the children, Stephen, was mopping the floor and Rose accidentally stepped in the bucket he was using. Rose hit him over the head with the bowl and proceeded to repeatedly kick him in the head and chest while screaming, "You did that on purpose, you little swine." Another time, Rose became furious over a missing utensil and grabbed a knife she was using to cut some meat and repeatedly inflicted light scour marks on Anna Marie's chest until it was covered in knife wounds. Rose always ensured that she hit her children where the injuries wouldn't be seen by anyone else, specifically never injuring their head or arms. Fred also became a recipient of Rose's violence, with Rose one time chasing him with a carving knife. But when Fred slammed a door to the room, or to a room he managed to get into to get away from her, the knife embedded in the door. In September 1972, the abuse the children suffered heightened. Anna Marie was led to the cellar of the house by her parents, where she was ordered to undress. She was stripped naked, tied to a mattress, and gagged before Fred raped her with Rose's encouragement. Afterwards, Rose told her 8-year-old daughter that everybody does this to girls, it's the father's job, and that she shouldn't say anything to anyone about it. Rose also occasionally sexually abused Anna Marie herself, binding her to furniture and encouraging Fred to rape her and forcing her to perform chores around the house whilst wearing sexual devices and a miniskirt. From the age of 13, Anna Marie was forced to prostitute herself in the house, with her clients being informed that she was 16. Rose ensured that she was always in the room when Anna Marie was with clients to make sure she didn't reveal her real age. In October 1972, the Wests hired Caroline Owens as their nanny. They picked her up one night on a secluded road when Caroline was hitchhiking from her boyfriend's house to her own. Fred and Rose learned that Caroline hated her stepdad and was looking for a job, so the Wests offered her a part-time job as a nanny to the 3 children they had at the time, and they promised they'd drive her home every Tuesday. Caroline moved in to 25 Cromwell Street a few days later and shared a room with Anna Marie, who she recalls as being withdrawn. Rose told Caroline that she was a masseuse to explain away all the clients visiting the house. Fred told Caroline that he was a skilled abortionist and was available whenever she needed such a service. She also said that Fred talked about sex a lot, and even told her that many of the women he performed abortions on were so thankful to him that they paid him back with sexual favours. Caroline quickly became a recipient of the couple's overt sexual advances and announced that she wanted to leave 25 Cromwell Street and return home. The Wests knew that Caroline hitchhiked on the A40, so they came up with a plan to abduct her for their own gratification. On the 6th of December 1972, just weeks after Caroline moved into the home, the couple lured her into their car with an apology for their behaviour and the offer of a lift home. Rose joined her in the back seat and explained that she needed a girl's chat whilst Fred drove. Rose began to fondle Caroline while Fred asked her if she'd had sex with her boyfriend that evening. When Caroline began to protest, Fred stopped the car, called her a bitch and hit her, leaving her unconscious. Rose and Fred both then gagged her with a scarf and bound her with duct tape. Once back at the house, the couple gave her a drugged cup of tea to drink and gagged her while she sustained a prolonged sexual attack by the pair. At one point, Fred remarked that Caroline's clitoris was unusual and lashed her genitals with a leather belt. Caroline screamed, causing Rose to smother her with a pillow, and proceeded to perform oral sex on her. Caroline quickly realised the seriousness of the situation she was in and stopped resisting the brutal attack. The following morning, Fred threatened that he would keep Caroline locked up in the cellar, would bring his black friends over to abuse her, and that they would bury her body underneath the paving stones of Gloucester if she screamed. The couple then calmly asked Caroline if she wanted to continue working as their nanny, and she agreed, seeing this as her opportunity to escape the Wests. Caroline hoovered the house but managed to escape when her and Rose went to a laundrette. Caroline went home and initially was too scared to tell anyone what had happened, but when her mother noticed all the cuts and bruises, she broke down and told her everything that she'd endured. Caroline's mother immediately reported the attack to the police, and Fred and Rose West were arrested and charged with assault, indecent assault, actual bodily harm, and rape. The case was tried at Gloucester Magistrates Court on the 12th of January 1973, but Caroline decided she didn't want to testify and the charges were dropped. However, the Wests did plead guilty to the lesser charges of indecent assault and causing actual bodily harm. Both were fined £50 and let go. Knowing that the pair were still walking the street devastated Caroline, who attempted to commit suicide when she found out. 3 months after the couple's assault trial, Linda Goff disappeared. Linda was known to the Wests through two of their male lodgers who she was having affairs with. Between November 1973 and April 1975, 5 more girls went missing. The first, after Linda Goff, was 15-year-old Carol Cooper, who lived in a children's home. Carol went missing on the 10th of November 1973 after spending the evening with her boyfriend at the cinema. It's believed that Carol was abducted while she was waiting for a bus. Over the next 17 months, 4 more girls went missing, all between the ages of 15 and 21. The disappearances of young girls did stop in April 1975, but started again in May 1978, with it finally coming to an end in mid-1979. Anna Marie ran away from home in 1979 after enduring a brutal beating to the stomach from Rose just days after suffering an ectopic pregnancy. This led Heather Ann and May June to become the focus of Fred's sexual attention. The frequency of the abuse the two girls suffered only increased once they hit puberty. Fred was overt and unapologetic for his behaviour, justifying his actions by saying, "I made you, I can do what I like with you." He referred to his intentions to impregnate his daughters and would occasionally force his children to watch porn with him. Heather, May, and their brother Stephen were so close in age and they became really close, they bonded a lot. So they decided that if their father asked either of the girls to be alone in a room with him, they needed at least one of the other trio there so that he wouldn't rape them. Both girls also decided that they would only shower or change when Fred was out of the house or with the other girl standing guard. Stephen was also told by his father that he must have sex with his mother by the age of 17. One time, when May protested against her father's fondling, he threw a vacuum at her, so she decided to just tolerate Fred's sexual fondling, but May recollects that Heather didn't cope so well with it and was badly affected by it. There remains a strong suspicion that by 1985 or 1986, Heather had been raped by her father, as by the mid-80s she had started to show signs of distress that's usually shown by abuse victims, such as biting her nails until they bled, drinking alcohol. She was always watching her father out of the corner of her eye. She expressed a lot of nervousness when she was around males. She constantly had nightmares and repeatedly bounced backwards and forwards when she was sitting on a chair. This behaviour led Fred and Rose to suspect that Heather had lesbian tendencies and resulted in her receiving taunts from the both, who had never taken a liking to her, with them calling her ugly and a bitch. Heather complained to friends about the abuse her and her siblings suffered at the hands of their parents, and friends began to notice the external distress she was exhibiting. Staff at the secondary school Heather and her siblings attended began to question why Heather had begun disobeying rules and orders to get changed for or shower after sports. One day, Heather was forced to shower, which resulted in teachers and other students noticing the bruising and cuts all over her body. Heather told her classmates and teachers that the injuries were from fights she got into with her siblings, but confided in one of her closest friends that the injuries were caused by her mother, who considered Heather to be a little bitch who deserved the beatings. By the mid-80s, rumours of Rose's sex life had started circling and had reached Heather's classmates, and although the children weren't allowed to disclose anything that went on in the house, Heather confirmed to some of her closest friends that the rumours were true. Word quickly reached Fred and Rose that Heather had divulged details to her friends, so Fred began escorting her to and from school. After Heather left school in 1986, she applied for numerous jobs in an effort to leave 25 Cromwell Street. By June 1987, Heather had pinned her hopes for escaping on a job as a chalet cleaner at a holiday site in Torquay, but she was told on the 18th of June that she had been unsuccessful in her application. That evening, Heather was distraught and is reported to have cried loudly the entire night, but by the next day, she was back to her usual anxious, distressed self. Heather's siblings left for school that morning, and when they returned, their parents told them that Heather had left for the job in Torquay that she'd originally been rejected for. But Rose told a neighbour that her and Heather had had a massive row and Heather had run away from home. Rose later told their children that Heather had actually run away with a lesbian lover. May and Stephen suggested that they should report Heather's disappearance to the police, but Fred changed the story again and told them that it wasn't a good idea because she was involved in credit card fraud. In the years following her disappearance, Fred occasionally threatened the kids, jokingly, that he would kill them and bury them under the patio like Heather if they misbehaved. In May of 1992, Fred asked his 13-year-old daughter Louise to bring some bottles to a room on the first floor. Shortly after, the other kids heard Louise scream, begging her father to stop. Fred went back downstairs later and the children found their sister writhing in pain after being raped and sodomized by their father. Rose wasn't in the house at the time of the attack, but when she returned, she told Louise, "Oh well, you were asking for it." Over the following few weeks, Louise was attacked and raped 3 more times by her father, with her mother witnessing one of the attacks and her father filming one of them. A few weeks later, Louise confided in her friend what had happened, and as we know from the beginning of this episode, Louise's friend's mother phoned the police anonymously and reported the abuse to them. Once police searched the house, they began a full-scale investigation, which led to Fred being arrested and charged with 3 counts of rape and 1 of buggery, which, for those who didn't know because I didn't, means either anal or oral sex between 2 people or sexual activity between a human and an animal. In all of my research, I didn't find anything to suggest that he had performed bestiality in his adulthood. I know he did in his teens, so I have to wonder whether it means on one of his children. I don't know which is worse, but anyway. Rose was charged with being an accomplice, child cruelty, inciting her husband to engage in sex with their daughters, and obstructing the police. They were both questioned about the whereabouts of their daughter Heather, with Fred claiming she was alive and well and prostituting herself, and Rose claiming she had no idea about her daughter's whereabouts. Although, on the 11th of August, she suddenly remembered and told police that she had persuaded Heather to leave because she was worried the other children may find out about her lesbian tendencies. She also told the police that she gave Heather £600 as an incentive to leave. Rose was granted bail on the condition that she had no contact with her children, Anna Marie, or her husband before the trial. Fred was held on remand in Birmingham while he awaited trial. When Anna Marie found out that her father was denying any involvement in the abuse, she contacted the police and gave them a statement telling them all the abuse her and her siblings suffered at the hands of Fred and Rose West. Anna Marie talked to Detective Constable Hazel Savage and told her all about the physical, mental, and sexual abuse inflicted by her parents and agreed to testify against both of them in their upcoming trials. Anna Marie also told police that she tried for several years, unsuccessfully, to contact her mother Raina and her half-sisters Charmaine and Heather Ann. Police spoke to Anna Marie's husband, Chris Davis, who told them that Heather had confided in him about how unhappy she was just before she went missing. Chris recalls asking Heather if she wanted him to confront Fred and Rose, but her response was, "For Christ's sake, don't. They'll kill us both." Police and social services spoke to May June in an attempt to gather more evidence against Fred and Rose, but when she found out that Louise didn't want to see her father charged, May denied that she'd endured any molestation at the hands of her parents. Instead, police focused their efforts into locating Heather at another attempt to corroborate Anna Marie's claims of sexual abuse. Inquiries to the Inland Revenue and Social Security Department held no records to show that Heather was alive, and 2 months later, Gloucester Social Services contacted police to express their concern about Heather's whereabouts and safety. The case against Fred and Rose collapsed when Anna Marie and Louise declined to testify against them at the court case on the 7th of June 1993. Louise expressed her desire to return to her family home, and Anna Marie refused to testify because she saw how miserable her siblings were, and she also feared Rose being vindictive towards her. Afterwards, however, Anna Marie did speak to DC Savage again and reiterated her concern for the safety of her mother Raina and half-sister Charmaine. The Wests were acquitted of all charges, but the children remained in care, although they did have supervised visits to 25 Cromwell Street. The majority of Fred and Rose's family were already estranged from them, but the remaining family cut contact with them when they told them the charges were fabricated by police. The police didn't give up though. They continued investigating Heather's disappearance and found that there was no record to suggest that she was still alive. The police asked Anna Marie about the family joke regarding Fred threatening to bury the children under the patio like he had with Heather, but she told them that the only time she heard him say it, he burst out laughing straight after, so she didn't really take it seriously. Whilst searching for Heather, police also found out that Raina and Charmaine had gone missing in 1971 and had never been reported missing. DC Savage believed that Heather was dead and had concerns that Fred's claims about her being buried under the patio may actually be true. On the 23rd of February 1994, Gloucester Police applied for a search warrant, which was granted and allowed them to search 25 Cromwell Street to locate Heather's remains. Police arrived at the house on the 24th of February, and Rose became distraught and pale when they presented her with the search warrant. She shouted to her eldest son, Stephen, asking him to get Fred, and gave the police contradictory information to what she'd given them before when they interviewed her. When police pointed this out, she once again became distraught and shouted at them, "I can't fucking remember. It's a bloody long time ago. What do you think I am? A bloody computer?" Fred had been working in Stroud at the time, but when he heard about the police's warrant, he told Stephen he would be home immediately. Fred arrived home 3 hours later and offered police a voluntary statement regarding Heather's whereabouts. Fred told police that Heather was alive and well, although involved in a drug cartel, and claimed that the jokes he made about her being buried under the patio were rubbish, but police weren't convinced at all. Fred changed his story when he realised they weren't buying it, and claimed that they just had a grudge against him because of his 1993 acquittal of the rape of his daughter. That evening, the search team left the premises and left an officer guarding the excavation site, and the children witnessed their parents talking in hushed tones while repeatedly glancing out towards the garden. In the early hours of the following morning, just before Stephen left for work, his father told him, "Look, son, look after Mum and sell the house. I've done something really bad. I want you to go to the papers and make as much money as you can." Shortly after, the police arrived to continue their search for Heather's body, but Fred immediately asked to be arrested for Heather's murder and to be taken to the police station where he would provide a full confession. At 11:15 that morning, Fred confessed to the police that he'd murdered his daughter, although he told them it was manslaughter. He told the police that he'd strangled Heather in a fit of rage and proceeded to dismember her body in the ground floor bathroom. Heather's remains had been stored in a dustbin before he was able to dig a grave and insisted his wife had no knowledge about the murder. He told them that Rose was preoccupied at the time of the murder with one of her clients and added that they hadn't yet found Heather's remains because they were actually searching in the wrong area of the garden. He even volunteered to lead the police to where Heather's remains were actually buried. Fred's solicitor told May and her brother Stephen that their father had confessed to Heather's murder, with Stephen slumping against the wall and May entering a state of shock in response, stammering that her father hadn't murdered Heather. On the 26th of February, the day after Fred's confession, police returned to 25 Cromwell Street and began excavating the section of garden Fred had pointed out to them the previous day. Shortly after 4 p.m, police found a human thigh bone protruding from the ground. They continued excavating that area of the garden and quickly found a mass of jumbled human remains in a bin bag. The remains, which had been dismembered, were taken away to be forensically examined, where they determined them to be those of a young woman, with a kneecap and several finger bones missing. Fingernails were found in a pile near the body, suggesting they had been torn off as a form of torture. Police were able to use dental records to identify the body was definitely that of Heather West's. The police charged Fred with his daughter's murder and questioned him again, specifically asking him why they had found a third thigh bone. And, to the shock of the police, Fred confessed that there were actually two further sets of remains buried at 25 Cromwell Street. Again, he agreed to take them there and show them exactly where the remains were buried. Both sets of remains were found on the 28th of February, with Fred naming one of them as Shirley Robinson and incorrectly describing the other as Shirley's friend. Since they had now found three sets of human remains, the police decided to do a full search of the property and placed Rose in a safe house to allow them to carry out the search. When Fred found this out, he wrote a note and asked his solicitor to give it to the lead detective on the case. The note read, "I, Frederick West, authorise my solicitor, Howard Ogden, to advise Superintendent Bennett that I wish to admit to a further approx 9 killings, expressly Charmaine, Rayner, Linda Goff, and others to be identified." Fred calmly told police that there were a further 5 bodies buried under the cellar and a 6th body buried under the ground floor bathroom. Fred claimed that the majority of these girls had been hitchhikers that he'd murdered in the 70s. He initially claimed that they'd been murdered because they threatened to tell Rose about his infidelity and he'd then taken them back to the house where he dismembered them, which he claimed made it easier to bury them. But you'll have to wait to hear the rest when I finish this story next week. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a rating and review, and Patreon to consider becoming a patron of Murder & More. To interact with us, you can follow us on Twitter and Tumblr at Murder & More, Instagram at Murder & More Pod, and Facebook at Murder & More Podcast. To view the sources and pictures for this episode, head over to www.murderandmorepodcast.wordpress.com. Have a great week, and I'll see you all next week for another episode.